Insights tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, adventure. Later on, we hear Robert of Huntington on Escape from 1952. But right now, Brian Dunleavy stars in Dangerous Assignment from February 25th, 1953 on NBC.
Dangerous Assignment, transcribed starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble, but when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize that this assignment's going to wind up with my life getting saved because I shoot my only friend in the deal. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
You're going out for a black market operation this trip, Steve, an operation that's unbalancing the entire Mediterranean economy and therefore seriously hampering recovery and defense.
Sounds like a king-sized organization.
They're convinced it's run by one man, an international criminal, but we've never been able to run him down. They're convinced, too, that he originally financed the project with money secured through various jewel robberies. Yesterday, the French Sûreté picked up a man named Dugas in Marseille. Monsieur Dugas is a jeweler.
Also a fence?
No, he claims his job was simply to break down the stolen jewelry. Get over there, Steve. Check with Inspector Bichot of the Sûreté. Dugas is the only link we have to the black market organization. Track down this lead. Get to that organization. Smash it. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
National Broadcasting Company is presenting Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Dunleavy in the role of Steve Mitchell, colorful two-fisted government agent. At all those places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment. Magnificent musical entertainment is yours for the listening every Monday evening on the NBC Radio Network. Listen on most NBC stations to these great programs: The Railroad Hour with singing star Gordon McRae and charming guest artists from Musicdom's Hall of Fame. The Voice of Firestone, featuring Howard Barlow and the Firestone Orchestra and Chorus in the melodies you enjoy hearing. The Telephone Hour, with the music of Donald Voorhees and the Bell Symphonic Orchestra. Yes, and Encore, NBC's new Monday night program special featuring Meredith Wilson, Marguerite Piazza, and Robert Merrill. Yes, every Monday night, listen to the best musical entertainment on this NBC station.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Get over to Marseille, find out what I can about a jeweler named Dugas, and hope the information leads me to the top man heading the black market organization operating along the entire Mediterranean area. It's early Wednesday afternoon when my plane lands, and I hurry over to police headquarters. A few minutes later, I'm in a huddle with Inspector Bichot of the French Sûreté.
To believe Dugas' story, Monsieur Mitchell. We found this in his shop. A letter.
Dated 2 days ago.
And the envelope bears the postmark of Nice.
According to this letter, Dugas is going to receive a package by the end of the week. A necklace.
Oui, and there at the bottom of the page is a rough sketch of the necklace with instructions how it is to be broken down.
Have you received a report of its being stolen?
No. But we sent a description of the necklace to all the leading jewelry firms in Europe. 2 hours ago, we received a reply from the house of Figeac in Paris.
And they've identified the bracelet?
Yes. It belongs to the Countess Navarre. Is
she by any chance staying in Nice at present?
That is correct. She has a villa there.
You know, Inspector, it's possible that necklace hasn't been stolen yet.
Quite. We have been informed there is to be a gala reception at the villa tonight. And, of course, the Countess will wear her necklace.
Look, could you arrange for me to get an invite to this little soiree, Inspector?
I will arrange everything, monsieur. But a word of caution. If your attention is distracted but for a moment...
Yeah, I might miss the play entirely and our friend might get away. Look, maybe we'd better change our plans.
Oh, in what way, monsieur?
Maybe we should arrange it so that the thief would have to come after me.
Huh? You intend to steal the necklace yourself?
Well, I'll admit my technique is a little rusty, but...
I see. Yes. Yes, the thief watching the Countess closely would most certainly observe the theft, would follow you when you left the villa, huh?
Yeah, and that way I might get to his boss, the head of the black market outfit. It's worth a try. What do you say, Inspector?
Oh, why not, monsieur? Why not, eh?
The inspector and I go over our plans in detail. We cover all the angles, including my rusty technique. While the inspector makes a phone call, I hurry down to Dugard's cell and we have a chat. He can't give me any more information than the inspector already has, so I mush on. 10 minutes later, I stroll into a small bakery shop not far from police headquarters. The proprietor, a small, dapper gent, greets me.
Good afternoon, monsieur.
You are Paul Bizac?
At your service.
I'm Steve Mitchell. Inspector Bichot telephoned you.
Ah, mais oui. You are the pupil, eh? Bien. Come this way. I have a small apartment in the rear of the shop. You will not be disturbed there.
You must be pretty good, Bizac. The inspector gave you a high recommendation.
Good, monsieur. I was in my prime considered the best in my profession. Then, alas, the Sûreté made me see the error of my ways. I paid my debt to society, and now I am a baker. A very good one, monsieur.
I don't doubt that.
In him. The inspector tells me you have had some training.
Well, in a way, yeah.
Forget it.
Huh?
Forget all you have learned. We start from the beginning, the Bizac method. Now, the item you are to appropriate is a necklace, eh?
That's right.
Bien. This string of beads will serve as a necklace. Now, a moment and I will turn on the victrola. Bien. Now, may I have this waltz, monsieur?
What? Hey, look, I didn't come here for a dancing lesson.
But, monsieur, you will be dancing with a lady when you remove her necklace.
Oh.
Shall we dance?
Okay. Who leads? So I spend the rest of the afternoon waltzing around the back room of the bakery shop with an ex-jewel thief, and it doesn't take long to catch on to the routine, particularly when you're being coached by a sleight-of-hand artist like Paul Bizac. Finally, he seems to think I've earned my diploma, and he hands me a tiny pair of snippers.
These, monsieur, you will keep well hidden in your hand. At the right moment, sneak. The necklace is yours. And remember, the sleeve work is important. That is where the amateur generally fails, the sleeve work.
I'll remember, Professor.
You have been a most excellent pupil. It has been a pleasure.
Thanks. By the way, here's your wallet.
My wallet? Bien, monsieur, bien. You learn fast.
Yeah, not bad, eh?
Not bad at all, monsieur. Bien, monsieur.
Hey, my credentials.
Good afternoon, monsieur.
Over here, Inspector.
Monsieur Mitchell. Bien, you're on time. That is your plane over there. It leaves in a few moments.
How long will it take me to get to Nice?
You should arrive by 7 o'clock. At precisely 8 o'clock, you will enter the grounds of the villa. Proceed to the rear of the house. Somebody will meet you there. An American named Kimbrough. He is well known along the Riviera. He will see to it that you meet the right people. The rest, monsieur, is up to you.
Okay, Inspector. Thanks for everything.
Bon chance, monsieur. Bon chance. And be careful, huh?
Everything goes according to schedule. At 7 o'clock, I land at Nice. At the hotel, I slip into my soup and fish, and a few minutes after 8, I stroll into the grounds of the villa. My contact, lean, lanky Jim Kimbrough, hustles me into the villa via the kitchen, and we finally wind up in the ballroom.
This where the rat race takes place, Steve.
Nice crowd. You know most of them?
Know a few new faces, like that sultry-looking little doll over there, dancing with the tall gent in the fez. Her name's Felicia Belfano. You'll want to meet her.
Yeah, be a pleasure.
Yeah, you'll also want to meet the guy she's dancing with, Alex Carinos. He's new around here.
Where's the Countess?
Hasn't come down yet. Just waiting till everybody's here so she can make la grande entrance, I guess.
Jim. How nice to see you again.
Hello, Bernie. Steve Mitchell, Justin Bernard.
Pleasure, Mr. Mitchell.
Mr. Bernard.
Such a long time it has been, eh, Jim?
Monte Carlo, wasn't it, Bernie?
Oh, please. Don't remind me of that.
My luck was lousy, too.
Jimmy, my boy, a spoon favor, huh?
How much?
Oh, no. You misunderstand. The young lady you were dancing with a short time ago, over there.
Felicia?
Oh, Felicia. It's a beautiful name. Beautiful.
You want an introduction?
I would be eternally in your debt, Jimmy.
Okay, pal. I'll see what I can do.
Good boy. Au revoir, Mr. Mitchell.
So long, Mr. Bernard.
He's a wolf boy, Steve. He collects objects, d'art, and dolls. Live ones, that is.
I guess that. His fangs were showing.
Well, come on, let's circulate.
So we circulate, and through Jim Kimbrough, I meet practically everyone who is anyone on the Riviera. An hour goes by, and still no sign of the Countess. I'm beginning to get a little worried when finally she makes her grand entrance, and all of a sudden, my clever little plan doesn't look so clever.
Hey, Steve, do you see what I see?
Yeah, she isn't wearing the necklace. My schedule falls apart right here.
Something's gone wrong, that's for sure. Hey, wait a minute, look over there.
Yeah, Felicia Belfano heading up the stairs. Come on, let's tail her. When we get to the second floor, Felicia is nowhere in sight. While Kimbrough cases the corridor, I slip into the Countess's room. There's a jewelry box on her dressing table and the necklace. Suddenly, I get the feeling I'm not alone in the room. I scoop up the necklace, ease out onto the balcony, and climb down the ivy-covered wall. A few minutes later, I'm out on the street. I grab a cab, and as we pull away, I look out the rear window. On the grounds of the villa, a pair of car lights are suddenly switched on. The car comes down the driveway and starts trailing my cab. I know I'm in business. So far, the operation hasn't gone quite according to plan, but the net result is the same. I've got the Countess's necklace, and somebody's following me. Probably the jewel thief, who could be pretty burned up that I beat him to it. So if I play my cards right and find out who he or she is, I may be able to get to the boss, the gent who's running the black market outfit. I head for my hotel and go to the bar. A plainclothes cop gives me a nod and slides out of one of the booths I slide in. I reach down as I slip under the seat. I slip the necklace in, and I settle down and wait. I don't have to wait long.
Hello.
Oh, Miss Belfano, isn't it?
Felicia Belfano. We met at the Countess Villa.
Yeah, sit down.
Thank you. It is a surprise seeing you here.
Is it?
Yes, I did not know we were staying at the same hotel.
Oh, you're staying here too, huh? Quite a coincidence.
No, not a coincidence. I was a late arrival here in Nice. The other hotels were filled.
I see. You're on vacation?
No, not exactly. I'm a dancer on tour. They wanted me to perform at the Countess's, but suddenly I decided to leave.
Oh?
A most persistent and annoying man named Bernard kept after me.
Oh, yeah, the boy wolf.
But I must say I'm quite disappointed in this place, Steve.
Oh, I don't know. There are quite a few things to do around here if you know the right places.
And the right people, huh? Maybe I have not been with the right people.
Maybe. That big fellow with the fez you were talking to at the Countess is a friend of yours?
Alex? Casual acquaintance. But I believe we were speaking of excitement, things to do with the right people.
Like to see for yourself?
Yes.
Okay, let's go, Felicia.
Let me go up and change, Felter. I'll only be a moment.
She heads out of the bar. After a second or two, I get up from the booth and ease over to the door, just in time to see her stop at the magazine counter and exchange a few words with a guy who's been standing there real casually-like. It's Alex, the big guy in the fez. Felicia goes up the stairs, and I go back to my booth. 2 minutes later, I've got company again.
Good evening, sir. Good evening.
Huh? Oh, I believe we met at the party earlier this evening.
To be sure. I am Alex Carinos, and you are...
Steve Mitchell.
To be sure.
Sit down.
Thank you, but I will not stay.
You bored with the party, too?
Not exactly. I was, as a matter of fact, enjoying myself to the utmost until a charming young friend of mine left suddenly.
Oh?
The night is young, Mr. Mitchell. If you are a stranger here, perhaps I could show you some of the attractions of the place.
Huh? Well, thanks, Alex, but I sort of have a date.
In that case, allow me to congratulate you on your good fortune.
Why, thanks. I hope it is. Steve Mitchell.
Come in, Steve.
Hey, what's the deal, Felicia? I thought we were going to do the town together. I've been waiting down in that bar 15 minutes. Alex is long gone, and... Hey, what's the matter? What are you staring at?
Steve.
Don't move.
What?
I'm right behind you.
Yeah. So's that gun of yours. Who are you?
I will ask the question for the moment. Where's the necklace?
I don't wear necklaces.
Don't waste my time. It is not in the room. It's not on the girl. Therefore, if the two of you are in it together, you must have it.
Look,
Steve, I don't understand any of this. What is he talking about?
You understand that if you'll turn over the necklace, we can perhaps make a deal.
What kind of a deal?
My name is Sargo. I'm an insurance investigator.
Oh?
My company sent me to investigate the many jewel robberies along the Riviera. I was knocked unconscious near the Contessa's room. When I recovered, the necklace was gone. I learned that you and this young lady had left the party. I traced you here. Now, the necklace.
I don't have it.
You will allow me to find it out for myself. I will search you. And please stand very still.
Wait a minute.
I said stand still.
This is no good. He's sure to find my credentials and comment on them. If Felicia is in on the deal, that'll blow it sky high. I can't risk it. I whirl, knock his gun to one side with my elbow and flatten him.
Steve, you did steal the necklace.
Look, we'd better split up. Meet me down at the waterfront. The small pier farthest east, 15 minutes. We can talk about the necklace and what we're going to do with the money, huh? I duck out of a room down the back stairs and through a few assorted alleys to the waterfront. I wait on the pier in the shadows for about 20 minutes. Then I hear somebody coming.
Okay, hold it.
Steve. Hey,
Jim Kimbrough.
Oh, brother, you scared me out of 5 years' growth.
Wait a minute. What are you doing here? How come you knew about the meeting place?
Well, I came to tell you. Felicia's on the level. She's not involved in the deal.
How do you know?
Well, as soon as you left her hotel room, she called the police. Told them you wanted to meet her here.
Oh, great. Well, that leaves me fresh out of leads for the moment.
Yeah.
That's far enough, gentlemen.
Well, hello, Alex.
You would not accept my invitation to accompany me earlier, but this is a much better opportunity anyway. The necklace, please.
He moves closer to frisk me. Suddenly, Kimbrough hacks the gun out of his hand. I scoop it up, then I get an idea. I may need Kimbrough later, and I warn him on the loose. I wink at him. He gets the message. I point the gun slightly to one side of him and pull the trigger. He does a real convincing job of it. Alex's eyes almost pop out.
You shot your own partner?
Ex-partner. He was getting grabby. Wanted half of the take from the necklace.
Well, I can see you are not one to trifle with. Good, good. Then we can perhaps make a deal. And I will not ask for half. I will be satisfied with quarter.
You're in no position to make a deal. I've already got the necklace.
But you are a marked man, Mr. Mitchell. First a jewel theft, now a murder. You'll probably not get out of this alive. Unless, of course, I could arrange safe passage, which I can, thanks to certain connections.
Maybe you've got a point. Anyway, we can talk about it.
We can talk at my apartment.
Why not at your boss's place?
I am now my own boss.
Oh?
Come.
So, you were in the Countess's room when I lifted the necklace, huh, Alex? You know, I thought I felt somebody watching me.
Oh, you can imagine my rage. I had planned it carefully. After I knocked the guard unconscious and hit his body, I slipped into the room. Then you came, and I had to hide. Here's my apartment.
Where are the lights?
I will get them. There. Bernard.
Hey.
Yes, Bernard.
Bernard!
Getting rid of your stooge, huh?
You could not have put it better, Mitchell.
So the amateur wolf has sharper teeth than I figured. You're the boy who's running the black market setup.
Exactly.
One thing I don't get, why'd you have Alex keep on the jewel robberies after you got enough dough to start the black market operation?
Continuing the thefts was his own idea. I told him to stop and leave the area. He did not obey. Now he's dead, and you are next.
You forget I have the necklace hidden.
You forget I'm not interested in the necklace. I only wish to close your mouth.
Suddenly, I spot somebody outside the window on the fire escape. It's Kimbrough. He tries to ease the window open, but it makes a little noise. Bernard whirls toward it. I lunge at Bernard, knock the gun away, but he gives me the knee and sends me sprawling into Kimbrough. We both hit the floor. Bernard runs out of the room. We scramble to our feet and follow.
There he goes upstairs, Steve, heading for the roof.
We pound up after him, chase him across the roof. He reaches the edge and then dives across at the next roof.
He's not going to make it.
His hands clutch the edge frantically, but he can't hold on. Brother. Well, that's that.
Yeah. I thought that dive I took when you staged that fake shooting was something. But it didn't compare with Bernard's just now.
No, it sure didn't, Jim. I guess you might say the black market just hit the bottom.
Our star, Brian Donlevy, will return in a moment. Variety is the spice of life, they say, and variety is what we at NBC attempt to give you each Thursday evening. Each Thursday on most NBC stations, you'll hear such entertaining programs as The Roy Rogers Show, Father Knows Best, Truth or Consequences, The Judy Canova Show, and Eddie Cantor's Show Business Show. Roy Rogers brings Western song and adventure from the Double R Bar Ranch in Paradise Valley. Then later it's time for Father Knows Best with Robert Young in the title role. Perhaps you'll agree that the thing about which Father Knows Best is trouble. Ralph Edwards then brings you Truth or Consequences, and the fun really begins when a contestant misses a question and has to pay the consequences. Judy Canova adds to the mirth and merriment with hilarious comedy and also some songs in her own delightful style. Yes, and then Eddie Cantor brings you his Show Business Show, during which he reminisces about his years in the entertainment world. Every Thursday, listen to all these fine shows on most NBC stations.
Next week, Bavaria, a manhunt, and a woman.
And that will be Steve Mitchell's dangerous assignment next week. Included in tonight's cast were Tony Barrett, Hal Gerard, Dan Riss, Paul Duboff, and Betty Lou Gerson. This is John Storm speaking. Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, with Herb Butterfield as the commissioner, is written by Bob Reif and Adrian John Doe, and is directed by Bill Karn. Be with us again next week at this time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another transcribed Dangerous Assignment.
Dangerous Assignment, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 25th, 1953 on NBC. You are listening to an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now coming up next, a story based on Robin Hood by Anthony Ellis, one of the busiest writers, directors, and occasional actors on radio during its golden era. In the year of this next broadcast alone, he penned episodes of Escape, the prestige drama series on stage, even wrote successful episodes of Suspense and Gunsmoke. And we hear his take on the legend of Robin Hood, called Robert of Huntington, next. From October 26, 1952, on CBS, it's Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are hiding in the middle of a great forest, quiet as a shadow, while closing in on you, hunting you down like an animal, is a silent archer who will kill you with an arrow through the heart.
Listen now as Escape brings you Anthony Ellis' adaptation of the classic story, Robert of Huntingdon.
Let it be known by all present that a sum of 100 pounds is placed upon the head of the outlaw, Robert of Huntingdon. And that an additional 50 pounds is to be the reward for whomsoever shall maim, kill, or capture the following. The felons Little John, Will Scarlet, Will Stutley, Nick Much, the friar known as Tuck, Gamble Gold, Eleanor Dale, Arthur O'Bland, David Doncaster, Gilbert of the White Hand.
That proclamation was by order of his worship, the Sheriff of Nottingham, in whose house a meeting was taking place.
Robin Hood! Robin Hood! I'm sick of the sound of that name. Something's got to be done. It's gone too far. They shoot the king's deer in the king's forest. Why, they call it their forest. Nobody's safe anymore. Beggar, tinker, bishop, nobody. It's got to stop. Now, I want Sir Martin of Matlock to say a few words. He's offered his services in the name of the king and myself, Sir Martin.
My lords, gentlemen, it seems quite obvious that your attempts to put a stop to this Robin Hood have been anything but successful. I've heard it said that more than once the sheriff himself has been tied backwards on an ass and sent trotting home.
Quiet, quiet. We know all about that, Sir Martin. Do you mind getting to the point?
All right. The point is that in Sherwood Forest, there's a band of about 140 who fancy themselves the savior of the poor and the scourge of the rich. Well, that's an old story, and one I'm sure we've come to know pretty well. Any excuse for outlawry? Well, I propose to stop them, to gather a force of men, 100 mounted, 100 archers, and 100 foot soldiers, go into that forest and exterminate Robin Hood with the others once and for all.
Wait. We can't afford to give you such an army without some kind of plan. And besides, most of our best men lie buried there as it is. What you're proposing has been tried. It's nothing new. You don't know these outlaws as we do.
I have a plan, Your Worship.
Oh?
I'll go into the forest alone.
Alone?
These outlaws don't know me, and I think because of that, I'll be able to succeed.
How?
Let's say I pretend to be a wronged yeoman. They take me in to become one of the band. I find out their weakness, their sentry posts, everything I can to help us when the time comes for attack.
It's very dangerous, you know. We won't be able to help you if they don't believe your story.
Well, it's my life, Your Worship. I can do what I want with it. If I fail, you've lost nothing. If I succeed...
All right.
And the rest of you? Good. Good. Give me a week. I'll get word to you when the time comes. My signal for the attack will be a blast on this horn. And now, my lords and gentlemen, I'll disguise myself as a poor but honest yeoman, foully wronged by His Worship, the Sheriff of Nottingham.
The sheriff had made an ally in Sir Martin of Matlock, and with him the hope that his worst enemy, Robin Hood, would at last be brought to justice. In Sherwood Forest, two men dressed in Lincoln green sat lazily beside a brook. One tall, handsome, his cap set carelessly at an angle on his head, shading the eyes from the sun. The other man, a giant, at least 7 feet, and an ell or more around the waist, chewing and sucking at the marrow of an entire oxen thigh bone.
I'm going to have to speak to Nick much about the quality of the sheriff's beef, Robin. Got a feeling he's letting him graze on sour grass.
Pounded good enough, little... Little John. You know, I've been thinking.
Oh, sir.
When was the last time the sheriff of Nottingham came to Sherwood?
I remember. It was when Nick Mutch and I brought him. Remember we tied him backwards?
Yes, I remember. It's more than a year ago, wasn't it? Doesn't it seem strange to you?
Strange?
Yes.
Well, dull, maybe. Life isn't the same without that nasty little toad to worry.
Robin, you've got an idea. We go to Nottingham, huh? We could do it again. 20 men, storm his house.
No, I wasn't thinking of that. But, I have a feeling that something is wrong. He's up to something. I can feel it. The forest has been too quiet, and we haven't been bothered for a long time.
I notice you're growing the beginning of a pot.
Don't talk to me about pots, you great cumbersome hog. Little John. Wait a minute.
What?
Listen.
To what?
Someone's coming. Pick up your bow. Give me cover from the trees over there. I'll wait here. See who it is.
Yeah, be careful, Robin.
Morning, stranger.
Well, good morning to you, my friend.
I seem to have lost my way. Can you tell me where I am?
Certainly. This is Sherwood Forest. Where are you going?
Nowhere. Anywhere.
Where do you come from?
Nottingham.
Huh?
Yes, today, thanks to the sheriff, I lost my cottage, my cow, my land, everything.
Oh? I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I know the forest well enough. If you like, I'll guide you through it.
Thanks. But, I'm looking for a man here, a particular man.
No?
Robin Hood. Possibly you know him. He's called an outlaw by some, but there are others who swear by him.
Yes, I know. Do you mind if I ask you why you want to find him?
Well, they say he's always in need of good yeomen. Now that I'm a felon in the eyes of the king, I've nothing much to live for unless he takes me into his company.
Well, what is this nasty thing that you did?
It was one of the king's deer. I shot it and was seen by a forester.
Yeah.
I escaped with my life, my longbow, and these arrows.
Uh-huh. Now, from the look of your eye, I'd say you have the making of an archer. Wait a minute. Little John!
Yes?
What's your name, my friend?
Martin Greenleaf.
Ah. This little fellow coming here is called Little John. Martin Greenleaf wants to join the band of Sherwood Forest.
I heard the talk.
What are you called?
Robin Hood.
Well, I wasn't sure.
Take him to David Doncaster, Little John. Have him measured for a suit of green. And then tell Nick Much to prepare some food for him. Welcome to Sherwood, Martin Greenleaf. I think you can see to it that you'll never have regrets for today.
So according to his plan, Sir Martin of Matlock was received with all the hospitality and kindness the outlaws could give. Only one looked on the newcomer with a jaundiced eye, Little John. Friar Tuck came upon the giant, sullenly whittling a shaving of wood.
And what's the matter with you, little man?
Yes.
Face like that is enough to make a bee's nectar sour. Now, why aren't you at table feasting with that newcomer, Martin?
Fat friar.
Huh?
Go away, I didn't ask for your company.
Oh, save us all, I don't like yours either. That's no answer to my question.
All right, then, I don't like him. This Martin Greenleaf.
Oh?
I don't know why. Robin's too easy. He's a mark for a sad story. This fellow's told one, that's all.
And if the story is true?
If. I'd rather have found that out before inviting him to join us.
You are a suspicious chap.
Yeah, well, go on. Go on back and stuff yourself. I didn't ask you.
Yeah, where are you going, Charlie?
To look for better company.
But Little John had another idea. He dressed himself in the disguise of a tailor, and carrying nothing but a stave and a dagger, he made his way to Nottingham, where he hoped to find out what he could about Martin Greenleaf. But luck wasn't with him, because he'd gone less than a mile beyond the forest when he was seen by six of the sheriff's henchmen. And because of his great height, they recognized him.
I tell you what it is. It's Little John. I've seen him before when we fought the outlaws in the forest. Take him!
The odds were too great, and finally Little John was taken prisoner into Nottingham, where he was locked in prison to await the sheriff's displeasure. It was Will Scarlet who heard the news from a friendly tinker and carried it to the outlaws.
Robin! Robin! Quiet, all of you, quiet!
Quiet! What's the matter, Will?
Little John. Little John.
Well, what about Little John?
The sheriff's men took him by surprise. They've got him now, in Nottingham.
Where? When? He was here a little while ago.
That's all I can tell you. From the Nottingham Road, the tinker swears it was Little John.
All right, we'll go to Nottingham then.
And I'll tell you for one, I'll pick out the sheriff's heart and throw it in the dogs when we come back.
To Nottingham!
We will return to Escape and tonight's story, Robert of Huntington, in just a moment. For stirring chorus singing, lend your ears to The Choraleers every Sunday night on most of these same CBS radio stations. Yes, later tonight, enjoy The Choraleers. And now, back to Escape.
When Sir Martin of Matlock heard the news, he smiled. He hadn't expected things to work so well, so quickly. But also the suddenness of the event had taken him by surprise, and he had to find a way to warn the sheriff of Robin Hood's decision. Because every available man would be needed in the attempt to free Little John, Robin gave the spy a sword and arrows, and the men in Lincoln Green began the march through Sherwood to Nottingham. They stopped at the edge of the forest, and Robin called a council meeting.
We'll wait until it gets dark.
Oh, but every hour, Robin, every minute we wait, Little John has less of a chance.
Chance? What chance do you think we'd have if we attacked in daylight?
That's it, Will. Yeah. That's why we've got to wait.
Well, I say curse the daylight and curse the sacrifice. While we're talking, Little John may be dying.
There's no other choice, Nick. Darkness is only about 2 hours away. With it, we'll have an element of surprise. Without that, we're finished. And so is Little John.
Can I say something, Robin?
What? Martin Greenleaf, of course.
Wouldn't I be the least likely to be recognized among you? I mean, supposing I went to the prison alone, say as a pasty maker, selling my wares to the guards.
You've got a lot of courage, Martin, but...
But what?
You know, it may be the thing.
Robin, I...
If you were to make yourself known to the guards, they might not suspect. When they're relieved of duty and replaced by others for the night, that might be our chance. While they're changing, if you could give us the signal to attack.
3 blasts on my horn.
Yes, 3.
All right.
If you are suspected, though, you know what it will mean.
I'll take that chance. You took one with me. Didn't you, Robin?
All right, Martin. Do we all agree on it?
Yes. All agree.
You better leave your sword and bow with us. We'll have them for you ready when the time comes. And good luck, Martin.
And in the prison, Little John, in front of him was the sheriff of Nottingham and his guards. The sheriff was feeling very pleased with himself at that moment.
You naughty, naughty man. You're going to pay for all these years, you know. I've waited a long time for this. Perhaps you thought I'd forgotten your treatment of me the last time I was forced to go with you into the forest. Silence! You'll pay. You're going to pay. Slowly. Slowly.
Having to listen to you is payment enough, you nasty little maggot.
Silence! You wait. You won't be laughing long. First, there's a little matter of your master, Robin Hood. I've got a surprise for him. Don't you worry. Couldn't be better. We won't have to bring him out of hiding. He'll come to us. I know he'll try to do something heroic. Sir Martin. Sir Martin War, honest yeoman, come to join your band today?
Then I was right.
Oh, yes. You were right. Well, come. When they do, we'll be ready. 300 men, you ugly pig. Waiting for them now, inside the gates of the town. What have you got to say about
that? My little John.
And at the edge of the forest, Robin and his men were also waiting. Each man silent with his own thoughts, and then the sun was gone from the sky. Robin stood a little apart, sharpening the blade of his dagger.
Hey, Robin.
Yes?
Oh, Friar Tuck.
Robin, I've been thinking.
Yes?
There was something little John spoke to me about before he left us.
Well, what was it?
This Martin Greenleaf.
Oh? Well, go on.
Well, now, John didn't seem to know why, but he said he didn't like the man, didn't trust him.
Now, that's strange for little John.
At first, I wondered about it. Then I forgot, and now I'm beginning to wonder again. And Martin's willingness to do what he's done. You know, it is possible that he is one of the sheriffs.
No, right? No, I can't believe that.
No. You've always been a good man, Robin. That's one of the reasons I joined you. I don't say I blame you if you thought his story was true. But at the same time, if it wasn't...
If he was lying...
Yeah.
Then little John's capture is on my head... Yes. Why would he be so anxious to risk his life? He doesn't know little John. Why should he care that much?
I should have spoken of this before.
No, and before I might not have listened, which is even more foolishness. Call the men together, Friar. We've got to decide about this.
And they decided. There was no proof of Martin Greenleaf's wrongdoing, but the thought was planted and grew until the fears were shared by all of them. And then Robin made his plan. Meanwhile, at the sheriff's house, for there the lawmaker had gone to eat the evening meal, a servant entered, and close behind was Sir Martin of Matlock.
Sir Martin, you've got word.
Better than that. I've got their plan of attack.
You mean they're coming now?
At nightfall.
Better and better. We're ready. I never dreamed of such quick results.
When the guards are changed in the prison court tonight, that's the signal for attack.
Uh-huh.
I'm to blow three times on my horn.
Good. The archers will be posted on the prison walls.
Yes, and pikesmen inside the gates. And once the outlaws are in...
Those that haven't been killed by the arrows...
The horsemen can finish.
We've got him. We've got him.
But that wasn't the first time the sheriff had said these very same words, only to see his triumph melt away through his fingers. A little while later, as the last gleam of sunset was turning from gold to rust and clouds were tinged with purple, a ragged and forlorn figure was seen mingling with the soldiers inside the prison gates.
Stand aside. May heaven bless you, kind gentlemen.
And slowly the beggar made his way closer and closer to the prison door. Then he was inside and sidling up to the guard who was watching the preparations in the court.
Go on, get out of here. I haven't got anything for you. Get out!
Kind sir, all I ask is that you...
Don't make a sound or I'll cut your head off, and I mean it. Back. Get away from the door. All right, quickly. Take me to the dungeon where you're holding little John. And remember one sound and you're going to be a very dead man. Faster.
Yes.
The key. Little John.
That you, Robin?
Yes.
Oh, man. This time I was certain I'd be dancing at the end of a rope.
Not yet, little man. Guard the key to the chains. Hurry.
Yes.
We've got to get out before the prison gates are closed. There's only a minute.
pretty small odds. We've got to run like hares.
Oh, give me a second to exercise. Oh, this is the dog who hit me while I was chained. Here, one second, Robin.
Hey, no.
Tilt your head, hey. Master foul fellow. Hey. Drop more. There. Now, Robin, I'm ready.
Robin and Little John made their way back to the great prison door and outside into the court where the light of day was almost gone. Two soldiers were approaching the gate to close it. And in the center of the square stood Sir Martin of Matlock, bugle in his hand. A stride away, looking pleased, the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Walk as quickly as you can and as close to the walls as possible. Come on.
Oh, I'd give my lot for my sword or even my stave now. Oh, you shouldn't have come, Robin.
When I say the word, run.
Hey, look. I'm starting to change the guard at the gates. All I hope is when Martin Greenleaf gives the signal, he'll blow the brains right out of his head.
Now, run!
A prisoner!
We'll try for the other side of town, run across the lee.
You're hurt.
No. I'm all right. Pimprick in the shoulder. Where are the others?
You'll see.
And because of the confusion, Robin and Little John escaped from Nottingham. And as he'd planned, Robin led the way across the lee to a long hedgerow some 200 rods from the town walls. And there they stopped because behind the brush was Robin's entire force. And each man had an arrow ready in his bow.
Give me a sword, one of you, and a bow.
Here, little John. I had not much hope of giving them to you, but I brought them along in prayerful faith.
Fat old devil, thanks.
Quiet. Quiet now, men. They'll be coming out of the town in a moment. Be ready at the signal.
And moments later, they saw the mounted soldiers ride out. And behind them had run the pikesmen and archers, fanning out in a solid line. The lights of Nottingham were behind them. And where the men of the forest were hidden in darkness, such was not the case with the sheriff's men. The sound of hooves fell upon the stillness, and behind the hedgerow, every string pulled taut, every long bow bent. Slaughter was terrible. Almost every horseman had been unseated at the first volley, and the deadly cloud of arrows continued to fall steadily amongst the sheriff's army. And when finally in complete defeat the archers and pikesmen were falling back, the men in green with drawn swords charged and completed the rout. It was Robin who came upon Sir Martin of Matlock.
This, Sir Martin, is for your treachery. This is for Little John. This is for me.
And with a tremendous stroke, Robin cut him down. The battle lasted only a few moments longer, and then on a signal from Robin, the men of Sherwood melted back into the darkness in the forest, leaving the field strewn with the sheriff's dead and hurt soldiers. Little John's wounded shoulder was attended to by Friar Tuck, as were the wounds of the others. And then a great merrymaking began, which lasted far into the night. As for the Sheriff of Nottingham, at the first sound of battle, he ran into his house, and locking the door behind him, stood quivering in fear until the news of defeat was brought to him. And then his great courage returned, and he swore a mighty oath that someday he'd go again into Sherwood, and by his own hand, bring Robert of Huntingdon to justice.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you Robert of Huntingdon, adapted by Anthony Ellis, starring William Conrad as Robin Hood. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Edgar Berrier, and Herb Ellis, with Jack Crucian, Vic Perrin, John Stevenson, Harry Bartell, and Peter Leeds. Editorial supervision is by John Meston, and the special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
You are standing at the entrance of a walled Arab town, while behind you, coming slowly through the night, are the shuffling footsteps of a blind beggar who will lead you into a harrowing world of darkness and terror.
Dramatic milestone on Broadway Playhouse tomorrow night and most of these same CBS stations. It's The Petrified Forest, starring Wendell Corey in the noted Robert E. Sherwood drama of romantic adventure. For a listening treat, be sure not to miss The Petrified Forest on CBS Radio tomorrow night.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from October 26th, 1952 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.